Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Tim Buell, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yay, Fat Guys at the Movies. I've got my Demi Moore voice going on.
Yes,
right now.
You do. Yeah, you got that little huskiness to it. I like it.
I know, it's sexy and all that. It's called Winter Colds. I literally started getting this cough. It's one of those things that you don't really notice it unless I talk a lot, or which I do for a living, or when I sleep and I wake up and I sound like this, you know, like 80-year-old man.
which I've heard both instances of since we started tonight. Yeah, because you were taking a nap before the show. So
that
I've heard
may
both.
Have happened, yes. But what's funny is Contagion came out on DVD and Blu-ray last week.
Yes, it did.
And so whenever you get sick after watching a movie like Contagion, you're like, do I have MEV1? Am I going to die? Am I going to like stroke out like Gwyneth Paltrow does in that movie?
you're consistently worried, yeah. I remember my father and my mother saw the movie, and my dad texted me immediately. He's like, you're not sick, are you? And I was like, why? And he's like, I'm just a little worried now after watching that. So that's true.
I thought it should have opened in January because it would have been great to release that during cold and flu season.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. It would have been so prime. Everyone's like, Well, how long have you been sick for?
I remember seeing it in the theater like September when they showed it, and whenever somebody would cough in the theater, I think I've said this on the show already, mm-hmm. but whenever somebody coughed in the theater, you hear people would tense up, and they have that whole thing where Kate Winslet is like, oh, you touch your face like 5 million times a minute, and people are like, and then you like are so super conscious of touching your face and then touching the armrest of the seat and going, oh my God, I'm getting pig bat flu. Oh no. So
pig bat flu. I love it.
But yeah, so it was, it's a little bit crazy here, so I have like I said, my husky Demi Moore voice. I'm going to prank call Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, you should. It suits you, sir. I'll just say that. You sound like we mentioned, you sound a lot sexier, so it's good.
Yeah. Hey, this is the theater of the mind, baby. Anyways, let's go through the paperwork here. You can go to Fat Guys in the Movies and catch us. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys in the Movies or Fat Guys Network, and we show right up. You're gonna go to facebook.com/FGATM. Or you can give us a voicemail at 740-205-6456 or email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you've been on about 17 times already.
Oh, seriously.
Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah.
Did I just say Jeremy? I just called you Jeremy.
You called me Jeremy.
Shame on me.
Should I continue the show as Jeremy? I can... You kind of do Jeremy's voice, you know, kind of not like that. It's bad. He's going to be mad at me now. Anyway, yeah, my name's Tim Buell, and I host the Golden Briefcase podcast over at firstshowman.net with Mr.
Jeremy Kirk.
Yes, not me, with Jeremy Kirk, though. And he's also been on the show a couple times. But yeah, we do new episodes every week, usually Wednesday evenings live at about 8 p.m. Pacific, talking about new releases on home video as well as, you know, topics in relation to a new movie coming out that weekend. So, for example, this week we're kind of doing our 2012 preview and, you know, kind of talking about all the stuff we're most anticipating, most dreading. Should be a good time. So,
oh, good, good. You know, I think I said this last week as well. When I was looking ahead to 2012, the movies, I looked at the release schedule, and there's just nothing I'm excited about. I mean, Prometheus, I think, will be neat. And The Hobbit.
Nothing really. What about you're not Dark Knight Rises? You're not looking forward to any of that?
It's not that I'm not looking forward to it. It's just every single thing it's like I'm a little worried about.
Okay, I see where that's coming from. Sure.
Yeah, I'm not in that camp that Nolan can do no wrong. So I think Dark Knight is overcast already. There's too many people in it for the freaking trailer. So
have you seen that? Sorry to chase this real quick. Have you seen that picture? It's that one from Inception. It was like a real popular meme. It's with Cillian Murphy and Leo DiCaprio chatting in the bar, and it was a comic someone put up in there. He's like, man, Cillian, what do you think? All, you know, everyone's saying Dark Knight Rises is a big Inception reunion, and, you know, everyone's in it, even Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And then he's like, man, I feel like we're the only people that haven't been in a Batman movie. He's like, what about, you know, Ken Watanabe? And he goes, no, he played the fake Ra's al Ghul in Batman Begins. And he goes, well, they're just leaving us two out. And he goes, no, hang on, I played Scarecrow in Batman Begins. And Leo just looks at him, and it's just a comic, but I thought it was brilliant. But totally suits your point where you're saying it's overcast. They're pumping it full of every Nolan cast member ever. You know, it's insane.
Well, plus I have a theory that everyone's like, oh, this person can't make a bad movie, and I'm like, no, everybody can make that.
Yes,
I'm not saying this is going to be bad, but I have a feeling this is going to, and this is everything I think is going to be the same. Avengers, I think, is going to be the same way, where everyone's all excited and it's going to be like Cowboys and Aliens. So everyone's all excited, and then they see it and they'll be like, oh, it was okay, it was just about Cowboys and Aliens.
What were you expecting? Yeah.
So Anyways, that's it. You know, I have to make this plug because I guess I'm contractually obligated. I don't know if I am, but this Thursday, which is about when this show is going to go live, I'm assuming it's going to go live early. So if you're listening to it this weekend, too late. You can go watch VH1 on Thursday night and check out the Critics' Choice Movie Awards, which of which I'm a voting member of the Broadcast Film Critics Association. So you can go see and watch it on VH1 that night. It's hosted by Paul Scheer, who is a very funny guy from the League.
Absolutely. Great guy from the League. Mr. Yeah. Andre Nozick, yes.
Yes, the Dre. Yeah. So
Child, we'll see please. Who... I had to, sorry.
That's great. So you can see if anything I voted for. So like if Tree of Life wins for Best Picture, you know that my vote didn't mean much.
They threw yours in the trash. They're like, what? No, throw it away. Yeah.
Because like we did our local critics organization, which is the Central Ohio Film Critics Association, and they had their awards, and Tree of Life did it won. I think like Jessica Chastain won Artist of the Year for having done like 87 movies.
Oh, she was in everything. Yeah,
yeah. And I think and it won, and Tree of Life won Best Cinematography, which I support. I mean, I freaking hated the movie, but I will admit it's one of the most beautifully shot movies you'll ever see. But it was just nice because it's like people are like, well, Tree of Life did it. Cause I'm like, that's because I sacked it on every single point. I voted as low as because the way that voting structure works is you get a vote on every movie, you rank it.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, it's getting like ones on every time, and it's not like I was like gaming it. It's like I honestly believe Terrence Malick did the worst job directing a film that was on that list. So.
Yeah, and I can't argue. I still haven't seen Tree of Life. It's one of my list of shames from last year. I'm finally working through all those. But I'm very interested to see where I'm going to fall because I have a lot of friends in your camp and also those in the other one that thought it was masterpiece. So I'm curious.
Yeah, I thought there was a master in my opinion of it at some point. It was not just didn't end with peace. Gotcha. So anyways, let's move on to the quick reviews of stuff. We're going to just bang this one out. It's a warning. We haven't seen any of these movies.
Yeah.
So it's because it's January. The first one is Beauty and the Beast. Since the Lion King 3D conversion sucked up tons of money last fall, they're going again with another Disney classic.
Belle.
Beast.
What is dinner without a little music?
Music?
This January,
hello.
Be
our guest.
In a special limited engagement, the Disney classic returns to the big screen and becomes a 3D event.
This is her lucky day.
It's wonderful.
Now, Jeremy, I'm assuming you've seen the Beauty and the Beast at some point in your life.
Call me Jeremy again.
Did I call you Jeremy? What is wrong with me?
I thought that was intentional that time. That's why I was I'll let it go. Anyway, Beauty and the Beast.
I don't even know why. It's not like your names sound familiar or anything. And you don't even sound the same. I'm just stupid.
I guess. I said, I can do a crappy impression of Jeremy, but yeah. No, to answer your question, I saw Lion King 3D back, you know, in the fall when it came out, and my fiance and I are both big fans of some of these older Disney classics, and Lion King 3D was pretty awesome. Like, there was a few times where I kind of had that feeling like, oh, what is this ad? What, you know, but then they would do these epic vista shots and even some of the cool, like, interaction moments with the 3D, and you know what? It looked pretty darn good, and I honestly couldn't complain about it as a whole. I really love Beauty and the Beast. I've loved it ever since I was a kid. It was my younger sister's favorite movie, so of course we watched it all the time when we were younger, and I think we'll be going to see this one, and when it comes out, because yeah, it's the fiance's fave as well, so we'll definitely be going to check this one out.
Yeah, you gotta do that. So we're gonna go to a break. When we come back, I'll throw out my opinion. And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. I am here with not Jeremy Kirk.
Nope.
I'm here with Tim Buell.
hello. Briefcase.
Just real quick, my thoughts on Beauty and the Beast 3D. I'd not seen the Lion King, although I did see the trailer for it quite a few times in 3D, and I thought that the trailer for I've seen the Lion. I got kids, man. Lion King.
You better believe you've seen it 100 times. Yeah,
858 times, and so but the trailer, I thought they did a really good job with the 3D conversion. So I'm curious to see how good the conversion is on this, because they're coming out with Finding Nemo later this year, which is a little easier because it's computer generated. Absolutely. So all you have to do is just go to the source file, and yeah, I mean, it's not like a one-step thing, but it's a lot different than pulling it out.
They just check the box, and they click print, and that's it.
They're like, wait, we didn't say we wanted a 3D print. Well, there we go. We'll just go back. So I hope that this will look good, and I'm sure like stuff like Be Our Guest is gorgeous looking in 3D and that sort of thing. I'm just curious to see how long that's going to go, because The Lion King was sort of like, if you talk about the big Disney movie that everybody had on, I think we have every format of, we have the VHS, we have the DVD, we have the Blu-ray, because we have kids. So I'm curious to see if Beauty and the Beast is going to be as huge of a hit as The Lion King. I think it's sort of like they started with the one that would have the best chance.
Sure. Yeah, because Lion King was one of the most financially successful like animated movies. Like so many people went to see that. I saw it like two or three times when I was a kid in theaters. And I think I'm going to say it is going to do well, because I think it was received pretty warmly by critics when it was re-released. Like people were like, you know what, it was a great way to see an old classic. And and I think I think Beauty and the Beast is going to probably get close to the same treatment by the critic community. So I'm not sure. I hope people go check it out, because Beauty and the Beast is a great film anyway. But if the 3D is on par with what I saw with Lion King 3D, I'm definitely going to go check it out.
A little trivia. Beauty and the Beast is the only movie, until 2010, it's the only animated film that actually was nominated for Best Picture until Toy Story 3. But Toy Story 3 was nominated for Best Picture when there was that 10. So they're like, well, here's our five real ones, and then here's the other ones to appease to get people to write about it.
That's what most people thought, which is, it's sad. I thought Toy Story 3 was good.
But Beauty and the Beast was one of five back in 1991, well, 1992, because it came out in 91. But that's actually pretty impressive, that an animated film, I mean, it lost, I think, for like Unforgiven or something like that, but
Probably something, a little more worthy in terms of what makes a,
I don't know if you'd say worthy.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say worthy. That's more, bad words.
More socially acceptable.
That's good. Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Yeah, but we'll see. The next one we're going to talk about is Contraband. Again, we haven't seen any of these. Contraband. Mark Wahlberg plays an ex-criminal who is pulled back into a life of crime on the run to run. Wait for it. Contraband.
You were the best of the best. But the proudest day of my life was when you turned legit. You started a family, and you got out of life.
What's going on?
Chris, come home. It's my brother.
What happened, Andy?
I was running something, and I dumped the package.
When I stopped doing runs, you promised me you were going to stay out of this.
They're going to kill me.
They're not going to kill you.
You got me on that one. That was good.
Are you at all interested in this movie?
You know what? When I first saw the poster, I was like, oh, Marky Mark, and somewhere in my heart of hearts, I have a soft spot for the guy. One of my favorite movies is Boogie Nights, and Mark's, of course, of course, fantastic in that. He's playing this airhead, porn star kid, and unfortunately, he's never kind of skyrocketed. And maybe it's just the scripts and the people he's working with, because, you work with Paul Thomas Anderson, you're kind of guaranteed to be very well regarded, especially if you do your job right. And he's kind of just been in this rut for a while, and, I heard before I saw it, but when I heard he was in The Departed, I was like, oh, Martin Scorsese. He just cusses and has a bad attitude, and he somehow got a nomination out of it.
He was so hilarious in that movie.
Oh, he was great. Not a problem at all. But what I'm saying is nothing out of, his normal realm. He dropped a couple F-bombs and yelled at people, and he got a nomination for it. So I don't think I'm going to go check out Contraband, because it just seems like more of the same Mark Wahlberg action movie vehicle. But I'll see it someday. I'm not sure. Really not rushing out to check it out, though. That's for sure.
What kind of makes me interested in Contraband is, and it's not like it's a one-on-one poster ripoff. It just feels so much like Abduction. It's sort of like, because you got that poster for Abduction, you got Taylor Lautner sliding down the thing, and like this is like Marky Mark, of course, what I'm calling him. Mark Wahlberg's like, I can slide down this, but look, I got money. That's basically what his poster is doing. He's like, look, I got money.
I got monies. Watch out.
Watch out, man. So, yeah, I think it's sort of like, Mark Wahlberg, I think, is a fantastic actor, but he falls into his shtick so much, so easily, and he doesn't rise out of it all that much. But he's also, he can do action, but he just doesn't. He just doesn't scream action hero. He's not like Jason Statham, where you're just like, oh, yeah, absolutely, Jason Statham, action dude. It's sort of like Leonardo DiCaprio, And, you know, he's been in action movies. And, of course, you can throw in, like, oh, he's in Inception. Which I don't. That's not because of him, you know. And he was in movies like Blood Diamond, which was arguably maybe an action movie, but it really didn't work that way. And I mean, Titanic is kind of an action movie at times, but not because of him. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I mean, nothing against them as actors. I just don't see them as. I just don't see them as the typical tough guy roles.
Yep, and I definitely don't either. I mean, I think they can both do it, but that's not like a Jason Statham sort of situation. Not at all.
Yeah. So I will be checking this out at midnight on Thursday since they didn't screen it for us.
Which is never a huge good sign, but yeah. That's fine.
All these get preemptive suck. Now, interesting, the next one, let's talk about the next one because I have more to say about the behind the scenes of the screening of this than the movie itself, and that is Joyful Noise, in which Queen Latifah and the Dolly Parton robot creature star in a gospel play about a church choir.
The church council has already discussed it.
I think I know where this is going.
We've decided to offer the position to Vi Rose Hill.
Thank you, Pastor.
They live in the same small town.
People do care, and if you don't like that, maybe you should move to New York.
I did not ask to be made choir director. The council chose me over you.
They share the same big dreams.
Today, we are going to go out there and we are going to win this thing.
Stop.
First of all, I want to get your opinion. Are you like running screaming from the hills when you see this movie?
It's more of not that extreme. It's more of a complete lack of interest is what I'm feeling. But I know friends and family members who will probably go see this, which kind of makes me upset. But yeah. I'm like, really?
Dolly Parton fans?
Yeah, a couple of them are Dolly Parton fans. A couple of them, believe it or not, Queen Latifah fans.
I like Queen Latifah. I just have no interest in seeing this movie.
Yeah, I don't know. She's just never done anything for me. It's not like I hate her or anything. She just doesn't do much for me at all.
Yeah. That's all. What's funny about this one is, you know, I said none of these got screened. This one did. But I find it interesting that it was screened on the night of our local Film Critics Association award dinner. Where we have a little catered dinner and then we have a little presentation and we announce the awards who won Best Picture and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
They screened Joyful Noise on that night. Interesting. Which they knew that was the night that was happening. And it was on Thursday. So it's usually odd. It's not odd for a studio to screen a movie on Thursday night, but to screen a movie a week early on Thursday night, that's a little odd. The last movie they did this for was Country Strong, which was last year, and I was the only. I skipped the dinner because I had to cover it on TV, and I went and saw Country Strong. I was the only local critic who saw it.
Oh,
and I mean, I'm watching this thing going. And what's funny is with Country Strong, they originally like the dinner was on Thursday. They originally had it scheduled for Wednesday, and they moved it to Thursday. And I'm like, you just deliberately put it so nobody would go see it.
They're really hoping to just miss that, you know, negative buzz.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what happened with this one. This movie looks awful. It looks like a standard gospel play. I don't know if you've seen very many of them. I mean, when I mean gospel play, I mean I'm talking about it as a genre type.
Sure.
There's one movie I got on Blu-ray to watch called The Preacher's Daughter. Or Preacher's Kid or something like that. And the Tyler Perry movies tend to follow this format of, and they usually have some sort of, you know, religious grounding to them.
Sure.
And there's always somebody who kind of breaks from the fold and has to come back in. Although I don't even know if it's going to be like this. This just looks like a very nicey-nicey movie that I have no interest in. And then I was like, because I do... I do movie reviews for the Wall Street Journal Radio Network and like every other week kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I like to see as many movies as I can because it's the Wall Street Journal. I mean, it's great exposure. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just go check it out. And I looked at the running time. It's like 2 hours long.
Ugh.
And I was like, oh, I could handle it if it was like if it was that magical 1 hour, 28 minutes, I'd be
yes, 88 minutes.
I'll go there on like Friday morning after my radio spot and check it out. But I'm just like, I don't know. I'd rather watch Marky Mark being like, I got money.
That's the thing. Because as bad as Contraband might be, you still might be able to derive some of that, you know, B-movie action, you know, fun out of it. Like, you know, think Michael Bay movies. Like, you might still be able to be like, oh, you know, it wasn't a waste of time. It was a bad movie, but it wasn't a waste of time. Yeah, no, I think Joyful Noise is going to be a waste of time. So.
Yeah, me too. All right, we got to go to break.
Cool.
2 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
Now, welcome back to the Fat Guys in the Movies podcast and radio show. Well, this is the podcast version. The radio show doesn't get this. And because of that, we can swear. We can go blue in this one.
What? Okay.
Yeah, so... So go ahead, and we can now make masturbation jokes, unlike I was able to do in the first segment. I had to allude to it to get past, standards.
It was well
and practices.
Done. I, if you were looking at me, I would have seen your wank right then. That's how well done it was. So good job. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. This is just the middle segment where we're just kind of spitballing, going a little bit off the rails at times. If there's anything you want to talk about that's like needling you, that's bothering you, we can talk about that. But let's talk first about what we've got going on in the box office. This is an interesting thing, mm-hmm. because The Devil Inside made, I think the appropriate term is shit tons of money.
Yes.
On its first weekend, and it made, well, it was reported at almost 35 million, but it ended up coming in lower, so it was 34 and change. Here's what just boggles my mind with The Devil Inside making, and the final number was 33.7 million, which more than 1.5 times as much as Mission Impossible, which is fair because Mission Impossible has been out for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks or so, yeah.
But what boggles my mind about The Devil Inside is not that people liked it and it's a shitty movie. Mm-hmm. Because people like shitty movies all the time.
All the time, yes.
You know, I mean, there's every year there's plenty of shitty movies that do extremely well.
Every weekend there's shitty movies that do extremely well.
Yeah, pretty much. But what blows me away is The Devil Inside, as much as everyone's like, oh, it's marketing, it was awesome marketing. And I'm like, I don't buy that either, because there are a lot of movies that were great marketed, that were incredibly well marketed and had great trailers and did exactly what they should have done, and they bombed. I'll give you a great example. The A-Team, not this past summer, but the summer before.
It was two summers ago, yeah.
The A-Team. I'm not going to say it was a $100 million movie in terms of opening weekend, but I thought it had a really fun, it was an 80s TV show, it was having fun with it, it had some great action scenes, it had some, it had Bradley Cooper, who had proved himself with The Hangover, and later he did Limitless, so everything was in place, and that movie, Devil Inside, made more money its opening weekend.
Yeah, and that's very depressing for me, because I found The A-Team extremely enjoyable, and I've watched it many times since it came out, and it's like, I didn't see The Devil Inside. I told you off mic that I was planning on continuing my tradition from last year and avoiding movies I know to be bad. But I read the ending, I know what happens in this movie, and I didn't even see it, and it pissed me off, and I wouldn't throw a dime of money, I wouldn't throw anything towards this flick, and yeah, I read something on Twitter, I forget who said it, but someone was like, the only thing that makes sense is that people said, after talking to their friends who saw Devil Inside, oh, it can't be that bad. And then they went and saw it anyway, and they found out. It's got to be it.
Because what blows my mind is I went and saw it at midnight on Thursday night. And it was, again, this was not like a press screening. This wasn't even a free screening. Because people can tend to be nicer during a free screening because, average rank and file human being going to these things is like, well, at least it's a free movie.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I saw Gigli in a press screening or in a public screening, people loved it. And that's because they didn't have to pay. But but this one, full-blown audience, pretty full audience of people who paid to go see this, who consciously made this decision to go see it and paid, and college students, who is the target market. I remember seeing Paranormal Activity 3 in the same theater, and it was exactly that group of, oh, damn, in the background, people saying that.
Yep.
They booed at the end. And then I got home and I'm checking Twitter and I found people were booing all over the country at the screenings. And I'm like, how did a movie that got booed get so many people to go see it? I mean, I understand that the midnight show, not everybody knows, so they go see it. And I can even buy going into Friday.
Yeah, at least Friday, yeah.
But everyone's like, and I had somebody tweet on Twitter say, well, word of mouth doesn't kick in. I'm like, no, that's not true, because people, I get my reviews. I see, like, on the weekends, I'd say probably 75% of the reviews that people read my reviews are from a mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
So they're checking it in line.
Yeah.
Why did people go see this if everybody knew it was so bad? And maybe your explanation is
Well, and that's the thing. BS on that word of mouth takes a while. No, man. Like, everyone's on Twitter or Facebook, and it takes 3 seconds to say, yeah, Devil Inside was shit or Devil Inside was awesome. And you just reached out to all, 500 of your friends. That's BS that they think that it's oh, well, you know, people still were going to go see it. No, man. People knew how bad it was, and they still wanted to be like, oh, it's a scary movie. We'll just go have fun. I guarantee that's what it was. And it pisses me off because, you know, myself and a couple other people on Twitter that we love the horror movies, it's depressing because then you're like, oh, there's all these indie horror flicks that people, like, you know, should have seen. And every once in a while we get those, like Insidious, for example, from last year, did very well at the box office. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that movie, and I thought that was fun. But then you have something like this, which people know to be bad, and they're still going to pay $13 at the theater to go see it. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it also makes no sense because, like, you can't just say, oh, it's a found footage genre. But I'm like, whoa, no, maybe it's the paranormal found footage. But if you look, like, Apollo 18, freaking bombed, and it was totally a found footage movie and had just as much originality,
yeah,
as anything else did. And the other thing with what just offended me about The Devil Inside was just how bad it was, because it takes place in, I didn't get a chance to fully review it, so I'll throw this in here. It takes place in Rome. Most of it takes place in Rome. It's about this woman who, in like somewhere in New England, murdered three people while somebody's running an exorcism. That very opening segment is kind of okay. And then the Vatican ships her off to Rome to the specialty clinic. And then, like, I guess 20 years later, her daughter comes and is like, I'm going to go get her. And they're in Rome and nobody speaks Italian.
Oh dear.
She literally walks into a class that's being taught by the Vatican, and they go on house. They say, oh, well, they don't allow cameras here, but somehow they're bringing a camera in. And the guy teaching it is speaking in English. All the people in the class are speaking English. I'm like, no, if you're going to do a found footage movie, at least do the due diligence of having them speak Italian and work around that, because that's part of the bit. I mean, this isn't like The Rite, when they did The Rite last year, which takes place in Rome, and it was an exorcism movie. You can get away with it because it's a fictional thing. But no, they go to this woman's house to do an exorcism. And they walk in and the woman's speaking English in a bad Italian accent. I mean, she's not talking like this. And you're just like, oh my gosh. God. And there's a scene where cops show up. And I mean, it's seriously, it's like a Mario and Luigi.
Oh, dear.
Show up and they're like, hey, what's going on? Are we going to do this? And now we're going to shoot you. And I'm like, this was so bad. There's no quality. There's no level of quality to it. It was shameful. If I had made this movie as an independent filmmaker, I would have been embarrassed by it.
Ugh. And that's the thing. I don't know if they've reached out for a comment on, hey, your film was universally booed in every single theater. What do you think about that? I have a feeling they'll just go, F you, man. I don't care. Like, we made a movie and we just made $35 million. Whatever. It's just so dumb. Ugh, yeah. It makes me upset.
I hope the found footage genre burns out. And it will, because the torture porn genre burned out.
Oh, it's gone.
You know, eventually. And I cannot wait for, like, the people who are like 18, 19 years old who are seeing these, the bread and butter for these movies.
Sure.
I cannot wait 15, 20 years down the road where their kids are going to be like, dude, you thought that was funny? Or you thought that was scary? How could you think that was scary? That's stupid. And I can't wait for them to bring home and try and show their kid Paranormal Activity and have the kid just laugh in their face.
Yeah, it's probably true. I mean, I'm pretty outspoken as a being a fan of the found footage genre in general. Mm-hmm. I'm saying lately the recent outputting of that genre has been horrible, though. Like, with the exception, I really love Paranormal Activity 3. I thought it was very, very solid. And it's a genre I've always loved, and I remember, you know, obviously when I saw Blair Witch for the first time, I was like, this is terrifying and this is so real. But then, yeah, you have just the stuff you're mentioning of all this fact checking that's horrible and all this, like, if you can't sell your reality with your found footage, don't do it. You have no reason to do it. I think there are still plenty of things that can be done with the genre. I don't think now is the time to show them, though, because people aren't getting the point. I mean, think about all the found footage we've seen in the last couple of years. I can only think of maybe four or five that I actually really enjoyed, and the rest were just garbage. So
yeah, I don't dismiss the genre. I mean, I thought Cloverfield was neat. Yeah, it had its stupidity parts to it. I thought Cloverfield was neat. I like Quarantine. I like the original Wreck. I like the first and the third Paranormal Activity. But I do. There is new stuff you can do. But if it's just going to be another, If it's just going to be a rehash, this was also extremely derivative, because I heard a lot of people going, oh, when they did the exorcism theme, they had a contortionist. I'm like, that would have been great, and completely I would have respected that if they hadn't done the exact same thing in The Last Exorcism, which was in fact a found footage film with a, it just had less period, it had less vagina blood in it.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, see, and that was one that I actually really didn't care for when it first came out, but I've grown. It's grown on me. I own it. I bought it. So.
I thought Last Exorcism was really good until it got to the ending, where it just it went outside of its own.
It gets pretty crazy in a very brief amount of time, which doesn't necessarily work to its advantage. But I don't know. Yeah.
So, anyways, that made shit tons of money, and
yes,
I hope it drops. I hope it drops 80%.
That'd be amazing. That would prove a point, which would be nice.
Should. Well, and what's funny is if you look at Monday's box office, the Monday box office was it made just about $100,000 more than Mission Impossible did.
Yeah, which is Monday. That's really upsetting too, because Mission Impossible is awesome. I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was a great time. And unfortunately, no one's going to see it now. And you're like, oh man, come on, please.
Well, it had a good run. I think Hollywood has completely screwed the pooch in the last couple months, and continuing to screw the pooch in terms of their release schedules. Because if you looked like, and I know they always kind of put things in front of Thanksgiving, but they like released three kids movies, ostensibly kids movies. I don't know if you'd call Hugo a full-fledged kids movie. Mm-hmm. But they released Muppets, Hugo, and Arthur Christmas all on the same day.
Yes.
Dumbest Overkill. Move ever.
Yeah.
They should have held one of them for the next week.
Yep.
And then they had nothing then that week. And then there was another, they did the same thing. And you expect the week after Christmas not to have anything. But they like released one, like when New Year's Eve came out, don't you think Sherlock Holmes would have done better if it was going right up against New Year's Eve, although that was from the same studio?
It would have, yeah. It absolutely would have. It's just too much competition of, you know, the like-for-like kind of moving together. Yeah, like Sherlock Holmes, Mission Impossible, like all that stuff totally kind of is like almost the same feeling, if you will, while you watch it. They're adventure movies and they're here to have fun. And
you're seeing them for the same reason.
Yeah, you're seeing them for the same reason. If you put too many of those out, then I think people are going to choose maybe one to two to go see, and then the other ones just kind of sit there, you know. Yeah. It's just weird.
What do you think is going to win this weekend? We've got Beauty and the Beast, weekend. Contraband, Joyful Noise, and The Devil Inside still. Do you think that's going
to
hold on?
It kills me to say it, but I think it's going to hold on. I really do. And I think it's, again, that same word of mouth. It can't be that bad, and they're going to go see it. And it's, again, depressing, but let's face the facts. That's how it's probably going to go down.
I'm going to hope. Of course, I predicted that it wouldn't even break the top five, it shows what I know. I think that Beauty and the Beast will win the weekend.
Oh yeah,
I'd like to see that happen. I don't know. I think Joyful Noise is kind of a dark horse, simply because if you go by just sort of like the trends when they analyze box office and they're like, oh, movies with this person in it with this sort of situation tend to do well. But it's not a Tyler Perry movie, so it will attract a gospel play audience.
Mm.
It's very blatantly a gospel, literally a gospel play.
Yes.
I think Contraband is going to be kind of lost. I hope that we see like an 80% drop with A Devil Inside. I hope it's less than 10 million. I wouldn't be surprised if it is, but then again, like I said, by Sunday, why were people still seeing this movie?
Yeah, there's no excuse at that point.
So that's what I think is going to happen this weekend in the box office. Anything else happening in your life that you want to talk about? Anything you want to rage about? Any trends? Are you want to talk about
any rants? Films? I got off my chest.
Yeah. Did you kill any hookers this weekend?
Nah, I didn't. Unfortunately, it was a slow weekend for the hookers. But no, you know what? I did. I went and saw a girl with a dragon tattoo last night, and the David Fincher one. And I was telling you before we started that I have not seen the original Swedish trilogy or read the book. So this is like my first introduction to the kind of Elizabeth Salander saga, if you will. And you know what, man? I really dug it. I thought it was pretty darn good. I'm a huge David Fincher junkie. Seven's one of my favorite movies of all time. And I think he's carried on, especially in recent years. I think he's doing just a fantastic job on everything he touches. And Rooney Mara was, you know, fantastic. Daniel Craig was, you know, solid as he usually is. Nothing too special though. And I do have to speak though. I love the score for this, and I picked this up a couple weeks back before the film came out, and I listened to it. It's about 3 hours long, by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, and it was very cool to finally then, you know, match the audio to the visual when you see the film. So I really liked it. I don't get the hate that it's getting. I'm gonna argue with Jeremy about it tomorrow on the show, but because he was not a huge fan of it. So. Yeah.
Well, you know what I find funny about the dragon tattoo is, in particular, is people the way Hollywood looks at stuff and how they're like they're characterizing it as a bomb,
mm-hmm.
and it's not. It's not a bomb, especially if you look at who directed it. David Fincher, he's had one movie break $100 million,
mm-hmm.
and that was Benjamin Button, and even then, it only made domestically. And then again, it only made like $126 million.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't much. And the one, you know, everyone's like, oh, Social Network, that was great, and blah, blah, blah. That didn't even make $100 million. That made like $98 million, which it was cheaper than Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. But I'm like, this is playing exactly on par with what David Fincher has done in the past.
Yeah, it's not a bomb at all. David Fincher, in my opinion, is kind of doing these more mainstream art house films, especially if you watch him direct and you see how he does things. He's very, you know, Kubrickian, if you will. Like, everything's very meditative. And he's not looking to... He said it about the Oscars when he was nominated last year. He's like, I don't care. Like, I don't think there's a best film, best picture. And he just wanted to make the movie that he wanted to make. And that's something I've always respected about him, is I just feel that he's not trying to play anyone's game. He got his money, he's got his reputation, he calls his shots now, and he's going to make the story that he wants to make, and I love that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it this weekend, it still made $11 million.
Yeah,
which isn't bad. That's not bad at all for a movie, especially, and that's the other thing. It's an R-rated movie that's intense. It's almost 2.5 hours long. It's got this big graphic rape scene in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And that's, I always wondered why they were releasing that at Christmas.
Yes.
You know, there'd
be, I did love that tagline though, you know, the feel bad movie of Christmas or whatever. That was great.
That was cool, but I don't think they didn't carry that through though, did they?
No, they didn't. They kind of dropped it after that teaser that came out.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be considered. I mean, it's going to make it'll make its budget back when it comes to, it'll make his budget and out payment, you know, and it's
sure.
P&A and all that stuff. It'll make that back by the time it ends its run, and by the time it goes international, and especially by the time it goes to video. It's going to be a profitable movie.
Oh, totally, absolutely.
So, I like that. I thought people gave that a bum rap, and that's a shame. I mean, it was one of my top movies of the year, I thought.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, I'm doing what I sort of do every year, because. I work in retail, and unfortunately during holiday time, there's a lot of overtime that has to be worked, and a lot of, you know, I just don't have time to go see all these heavy hitters. I fortunately got a few of them out of the way before year's end, but I usually wait to assemble my top 10 a week or two after January's begun, so I can kind of catch up at least. And I've only got to see a couple more. I got to see War Horse and Tintin and one other one. I don't remember, but yeah. One other award season movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I have to bring this up when it comes to. I was going to mention this when we were talking about Contagion earlier. Mm-hmm. I have to say about that movie, Matt Damon is the funniest person to get bad news in a movie. Because if you watch that movie, a little bit of spoilers, when they tell him his wife's died, it's the funniest reaction ever.
It's a very funny reaction. Yes,
it's even funnier in the trailer because they truncated a little bit because it's almost like he's like well, your wife said, he's like, well, let's go talk to her, you know, or something like that. He's like, no, yep. She's dead. It's like that scene in Scary Movie 3 where they're playing off the movie Signs, and she has to tell Charlie Sheen, he's like, your wife's dead. She's like, takes out a hot dog, she breaks him in half and everything.
And he's like, I don't understand. It's what, like, can I go
that she broke her wiener?
as much as I hated the, you know, the latter parts of that series, that movie actually made me laugh more than it should have. I don't know why. It was so funny.
What's really funny about Scary Movie, I think it's Scary Movie 3. It might be Scary Movie 4. One of them, it's almost worth getting the DVD out and watching the deleted scenes and listening to them doing the commentary of the deleted scenes, because there's a whole sequence where a guy turns into the Hulk,
mm-hmm.
and then like rips a guy's head off with his buttocks. And wow. And they're watching it, and they're, you could just hear the guys who directed it, the Zuckers or whoever they were, and they're like, they're like, I can't believe we did this. This is so terrible. Yeah, and well, they're just going on about how awful it is, and that's, I thought, was pretty funny.
It's true. It's I mean, those guys, I really don't have any respect for them as filmmakers, because they rode the same train for so long. But to their credit, they made a lot of money on it, and that's why, you know, they got to do what they got to do. But yeah, some of the earlier, you know, chapters of the Scary Movie franchise had some really genuinely funny moments, and then I feel like they just got substituted for, you know, bathroom humor and stuff like that.
Well, they
like,
did. Oh. Well, it's there's three big names out there that did these sort of these kind of spoof movies.
Yeah,
I'm not putting Mel Brooks into this.
No,
I almost
no.
said Mel Gibson. I'm Mel Gibson. What? because The Passion of the Christ was a spoof of, you know, King of Kings. I don't know. But there was the original people who really kind of outlaid that genre were Zucker, Abrams, and Zucker. And they're the ones who ended up doing the later scary movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I give them a lot of props because they did the original Airplane and they did Top Secret and The Naked Gun. And then the Wayans started doing them, mm-hmm. and they did lesser ones like Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood, and although they did you ever see what was the blaxploitation movie they did?
Was it Badass?
I'm gonna get you, sucker.
Yeah,
that is a funny movie. So the Wayans were great in it. And that was Keenan Ivory Wayans, and he did, of course, he did the first scary movies. And then they went on to do Dance Flick, which wasn't good.
No.
And then it's the proto-human, you know, crawling on their belly people, Freeberg and Seltzer. And they're the ones who ruined the genre, I think.
Oh, they destroyed it. Yep. Obliterated it.
So I will always give a little bit of love to the Zuckers and Abrams for the, because I think that they've done some really funny stuff. And I even thought, like, Superhero Movie was funny. So.
Yeah, you know what? I actually watched that one and I did not hate it at all. I thought I was going to, obviously, and yeah, I didn't. It was just, yeah, you know, kind of bland.
I think by naming stuff blankety blank movie did people a disservice, because whenever that the blankety blank movie, people identify with Freeberg and Seltzer, with Disaster Movie and Epic Movie, and they didn't like Meet the Spartans, which was awful.
Hmm.
Although Vampire Suck was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Skip it.
Yeah, oh, it's funny, especially if you don't like Twilight. Hmm. But if you've seen the Twilight movies, it's funny. So.
Yeah, which I have, so I should probably do it.
You'd be surprised. It's way better than what they normally do. It's still not great, but
okay.
anyways, we should move on. Nothing else sticking in your craw.
No,
your craw's,
nothing really.
Your craw's clean.
Craw is clean.
All right. Let's do a Fat Guy 5 real quick. And These are in honor of Beauty and the Beast being re-released in 3D. These are five movies that we think should be re-released in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to... We didn't really order these very well, but I'm going to... Mine are up first, and then we got yours, the last ones. But I'm going to say, first one is Jaws 3D.
Yeah.
Now, I know it was originally released in 3D, but it was Anaglyph. And I think that, in fact, Jaws 3D and then a bunch of other things that I think they should... I would love to see them just get the original prints, separate the colors, and just do a digital print of this so you could watch it in full 3D. Because I remember watching Jaws 3D, and it's a terrible movie.
Oh, it's horrid. Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. I remember seeing it in, 1980, whatever, when it came out. And loving it. I actually went to SeaWorld because there used to be, God, I have no idea why, but there used to be a SeaWorld in Ohio.
What?
Yeah.
It was a landlocked area. I love it.
Oh, it's hysterical because they you'd see the advertisement. They'd be like Orlando, Florida, which Orlando's landlocked, but it's Florida, true. You know. Orlando, Florida, San Diego, California, and Aurora, Ohio.
Wow.
And I used to go to SeaWorld all the time as a kid. And I remember, because SeaWorld plays into the movie. I mean, it would be really funny if the shark showed up in Geauga Lake in Aurora, Ohio, and that's what it was about. But it was where, I think it was Florida, or was it San Diego? I think it was San Diego.
Yeah, I think so.
That it takes place in. But they of course, the SeaWorld of Ohio did a bunch of promotion there, and they had like the baby shark model out and everything, and that was really cool. So, but I think I'd love to see them take all these old 3D. I'd love to see them take The Creature from the Black Lagoon and give it a digital print.
Yeah, why not?
You know, or even crappy ones like Friday the 13th Part 3 and Amityville 3D. It can't be that expensive to just scan it in and render it.
No, it can't be.
Can't be that bad at all.
Yeah. The next one is Tron, because I was scrambling for ideas on this one. Because Tron 3D, I thought the Tron Legacy, I really enjoyed, and for all its foibles. And they re-released, of course, the original Tron last year on Blu-ray for the first time.
Yep.
And I've always loved that movie. I always thought it was really cool, and it was so visionary at its time. And I mean, this looks very rudimentary now, but I mean, I remember seeing that in what, 1984 when it came out. I remember going to the theater and being like, "Holy shit!"
Yeah. No, I saw it when I was a kid. I mean, anyone who listens to my show, they know my uncle is Bruce Boxleitner. He played Tron in the original film, and yes.
He fights for the users.
Yes, yeah, he does. He fights for the users. And, you know, I obviously was never that impressed with it because I was like, oh, well, you know, he's a real person, blah, blah, blah. You know, in my little kid mind.
That's my uncle. He's not a movie star. What the hell's his problem? He looks stupid with that hat and everything. Looks stupid. What?
Junk. Yeah. I watched it when I was older and I was like, oh, you know what? I can absolutely appreciate it for what it is. I've never been a huge Tron fan. I'm more like the idea of Tron than the actual movies. And
that's true.
Yeah. I don't really love Tron Legacy at all. I don't hate it as much as my co-host Jeremy does, but, it was not like, you know, one of my favorites last year or anything like
that's
that.
That's right. Jeremy freaking hated
it. Oh, he hates it. He got a lot of crap for it too on the website. So,
yeah, I loved it for what it was. I'm one of those people who I can get, even though I hated like Transformers 2 and I was like, on Transformers 3, cause I just don't like Michael Bay as a director. I at least get what his fans get. I personally don't like his stuff, but I understand them being like, oh, I can look past all the other ridiculously bad shit he does just because he delivers on this certain thing. And that's kind of the way I always was with Tron. But I'd love to see a Tron, the original Tron in 3D. I think that would be neat. Doing the light bite sequence.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. Seriously.
And Disney's out there re-rendering all their movies, so why not?
Why not? Pull out of the archives and go to town.
The other one I'd like to see get a 3D treatment would be Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2.
I'm right there with you on those, seriously.
Which would never happen, but it would be so awesome because it's Sam Raimi, and it's early Sam Raimi, when just he was really pushing the envelope. I mean, he was like the Coens in terms of, you know, and he knew them, but he was like the Coens in terms of just putting the camera in these weird places and shit flying at you and doing stuff. I mean, you know, both Evil Dead movies, not so much Army of Darkness, but I think the first two Evil Dead movies would be a hoot to see in 3D.
I completely agree. And you know what? I'm actually, I don't like Army of Darkness that much. Like I appreciate it as the kind of kooky third chapter. I am a horror guy and I love the splatter comedy of Evil Dead 1 and 2. And it just gets so insane. And you know, I don't even love 3D at all. Like I'm not a big fan, but something like that is prime for a 3D viewing. It's perfect. And I would absolutely in a heartbeat watch both of those in 3D, especially if it was just like a crazy double feature. I would be immediately there.
Yeah, that would be so cool. So if they would only spend a couple $1 million on it just for the handful of people.
Just me, you, and three friends, and then, yeah, that's probably it.
Exactly. And let's do yours. Yours are way more intellectual than mine.
Yeah. I was thinking in my opinion, the best 3D stuff is places we're not used to seeing things. And, you know, two places I can think of course, are underwater and then outer space. Outer space is probably my favorite. And I was thinking, well, you know, what crazy movie would you want to show in 3D? And I, you know, of course, thought of Stanley Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey. And I it's a film based on insane visuals, especially in outer space. It's got this very distinct pace. Everyone knows about the movie. I think that would be really interesting to see in 3D because I think it would totally become even more immersive than it can be for some people. As to if it would actually look good or, you know, do anything in particular that would better the movie for some people who hate it, for example, that still, you know, stands to be seen. But I think I would definitely love to see a viewing of that. And then the other one I wanted to also see is Alien. And that's one of my favorite films of all time. And this is, of course, Ridley Scott's 1979 Alien. Mm-hmm. I just watched the Blu-ray of this for like the fifth time. Kevin, have you seen the Blu-ray of these?
Oh yeah, I've got the Anthelian anthology. It's a great set.
It is gorgeous. I have never seen a 1970s movie look so beautiful that I have on that Blu-ray set. Like there are moments
it's so tough because the grain is so heavy in the film stock they use that if they take too much of it out, it starts to look plastic and Predator, like in the Predator release.
No, the Predator one's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this one, like, there's a few moments where they have, you know, people are always sweating in the Alien movies, and so you have a nice close-up of Ripley's face, and she's sweating, and the detail just pops so well, and I was just like, ugh, for this being my, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time, I'm so glad this is, you know, I have this release of it, but I think a 3D release of this would be a lot of fun as well, because you've got that, you know, the tension and the horror of the first Alien, and I think it would work very well in a 3D environment. I don't know. What do you think about that one?
I think it'd be interesting. I'm trying to think. It's not one that I felt was... It always felt a little... You never felt like you were in the middle of the action with that movie, and that's sort of like how I sort of, you know, bend the line on whether I'd like to see it in 3D, is if you really feel like you're into it. Mm-hmm. I think it would be fantastic. I would love to see the ship.
Yeah,
and if you're talking the Blu-ray release, the Blu-ray just looks gorgeous. You see the detail you've never seen before when they're going into... When they're first going in to find the ship and the eggs and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I could get into that. I'm a big 3D fan. I like 3D, and as long as it doesn't suck, and I don't particularly like paying a lot of money for it. So, you know, but what's interesting with the Space Odyssey, 2001 A Space Odyssey, is the Stargate sequence is what would look amazing in 3D. And it would be worth it for that, because it goes on for like 56 minutes.
Yes.
Because and in fact, I don't know if you knew this, but back when it came out, because it came out in 1969, and I wasn't born yet. I was born in 71, but I had heard this when I was that part of the thing that made it such a big movie for the studio was it was, of course, at the time where it was just massive recreational drug use everywhere, and so you get all the hippies would go and they drop acid, lay in the front. They lay down in the, because all these old theaters used to have orchestra pits, and so nowadays there's really no room to go there, but you could in these older theaters, and they would just lay down in front of the front row and just drop acid and watch that sequence.
Oh wow.
And then
it'd be so creepy.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think that would be a good thing to do, but that whole sequence I think would be a neat in 3D. I got an interesting story about, let me tell you a really funny story about,
go for it,
2001. It's my father's favorite movie of all time, and he took me when I was a kid, and I didn't understand a goddamn thing in that movie.
Sure.
Because I was like, oh, I like Star Wars. Let's go, Dad. And I'm like, what the hell? You know. But I mean, I've since really grown to appreciate it. And when I was in college, I was dating my wife, and we used to rent movies a lot. And what we would do is, this is how we do. This is a great, I'll tell you, if you're ever having problems with your significant other renting a movie, what we would do is we go to the store and I would pick three movies off the shelf that I think she would like. And then she would pick three movies off the shelf that she thinks I would like.
Nice.
And then we'd choose. And I'd be like, oh, I'll take that one. And there's a little bit of an honor system there, because you'd be like, oh, you're going to love this movie. You know, and you know. But so, and I said, oh, I'd be interested to see what you thought of 2001. And she got about 15 minutes in and just was like, she's like, I don't like this movie at all. I go, no, just stick with it. And then she like fell asleep in the middle of it. And I woke her up, and I'm like, and he's getting ready to go through the Stargate. I'm explaining, because I had to fill in the blanks. And she's like, this movie, this doesn't make sense. I go, don't worry, I'll explain it all at the end. And she's like, okay. And then at the end, it like, boop, turns into a star baby. And she looks at me, and they roll credits. And she's like, what the hell?
And you're like, ha ha, gotcha.
Exactly. I made you watch it. And she's like, she'll never watch it again.
That's amazing. Yeah, my fiance still never watched it. And she has a horrible habit of falling asleep if we watch anything after like 9 p.m. She's like, I'm an old lady already. And I'm like, yes, you are. I can be up till 4 in the morning watching movies. You know that. And it's hard. I would have to watch 2001 at like 10 in the morning. And I'm, you know, that's not the time to watch a movie like that. So
you'd be like, let's have our coffee and bear claws and watch 2001.
It's a strange pairing. Interesting bedfellows there for sure.
Definitely. Well, with that, we better go to a break.
Sounds good.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. If you got sidetracked or if you're on the radio, you can go back and listen to us online. Not too bad. We don't get too crazy.
I don't think so. No.
Dirty. We've gotten way worse in the past. So we've had this interesting string of relatively respectful discussions on the show. We have to stop that. That shouldn't happen.
It's got to be very lowbrow. We got to start talking, making fart jokes or something like that. It's,
exactly. That's my bread
down
and butter.
To earth. Yes,
that's right. But you know, we talked about some movies that should be converted to 3D. We talked a little bit about box office and how flummoxed we were by The Devil Inside and its performance. So go check that out. But now, what do we got coming up now?
It's the world famous DVD roundup.
There we go.
Nice.
Do you have anything? Is there any of these releases you said you haven't had a chance to check out?
Honestly, no. This week, and we do new releases on my program as well, and this week we're just looking at it, and I'm like, man, there's either nothing too, you know, too worth mentioning. The only film I really think everyone should at least check out just because of word of mouth is Moneyball. I have not gotten to see it yet, and everything else I'm relatively unfamiliar with. So, you know, this is honestly your bit. So take it away, sir.
Yeah, well, Moneyball is out there. And I wasn't a Wild fan. I'm not a big fan of Aaron Sorkin anyways.
Gotcha.
So parts of that I didn't like, but it's still worth checking out. It's a good movie, especially if you love baseball. I never got past the fact that I first saw it, the name, and I thought it said Monkey Ball.
Reminds me of Monkey Bone, that movie with, what's his name?
With Chris Kattan.
Yes, yes.
But no, Monkey Ball... When I first saw it, I thought it said Monkey Ball. I immediately had this image in my head of monkeys like playing baseball.
Oh gosh!
And then I found out that's not what it was, and just it could never live up to that. So maybe that's just me. The next one on the list is Boardwalk Empire, the complete first season. I don't know. I don't watch this show actually. I'm just putting it on there because I think it's worthy of being mentioned because there's so many people who love it. It's Martin Scorsese. He's doing HBO, and Steve Buscemi as a crime lord during the Prohibition era,
yeah,
in Atlantic City.
Yeah, I can kind of speak to this. I watched the pilot episode as well as the second one, and unfortunately, just because of my schedule, I didn't get around to week to week. But it is very, very, very good. And if you are like me and you have that empty space in your heart where The Sopranos was, this should definitely fill that void at least to maybe 60-75% level. So it will give you that crime family drama stuff that you love, and it's also in a very awesome time period. You know, the Prohibition era is very cool, and they do some fantastic special effects to kind of change the whole boardwalk area to look like that period, which is always awesome to look at.
What I always find curious, excuse me, about this really. Oh my gosh, Tim, wake me up.
Yeah, wake up.
but what I find curious about this show is they just wrapped the second season they just aired the second season.
Yes.
So they're now getting around to releasing the first season, which is a little bit out of sorts. Usually they release the season right before the next season comes out. So I'm not quite sure why they did that.
They're kind of doing that with Game of Thrones as well. I know that's actually the first season's coming out in the next couple of weeks to a month or so, and then with season two starting up in the spring. So, yeah, they're kind of staggering them in like a weird way. Maybe it's just HBO. I'm not sure.
That might be an HBO thing.
Yeah.
The next one on the list I'm going to say is What's Your Number, which is not a great movie. Just get that out there. It stars Anna Faris as a woman who thinks she slept with too many guys because if you sleep with more than 20 guys, you'll never get a... never get married, and she ends up sort of back in falling in love with Chris Evans. Not a good movie, not very well done. The only thing that saves it is both Anna Faris and Chris Evans are incredibly charming. Mm. And so if you're fans of either of them, it's like bearable to watch. That's all I can say about it.
There you go.
Then there's also There Be Dragons, which didn't get much notice. It's by the guy who did The Killing Fields and Roland Joffe, is I think how you say his name.
I think
and
it's Joffe,
takes place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes place in the Spanish Civil War, and it's about this guy who's up for sainthood and flashes back to his life and his differences with his brother. It's steeped in sort of that older middle world politics, you know.
Oh, okay.
You know, it takes place, you know, the turn of the century. So it's going to be tough to follow, but it's an interesting movie. It opens up some interesting issues. And then the one I really want to highlight, which surprised me, is actually my pick of the week, is the Scorpion King 3.
Oh, dear.
Battle for Redemption. You see this and you say direct-to-video sequel to a spinoff of a popular franchise.
Yes.
It's a threequel. It stars Ron Perlman and Billy Zane.
Oh, man.
It can't be good.
Can't
believe it or not, it's fun. It's actually a fun movie. It doesn't take itself too serious. If it got a theatrical release, it'd be awful. It has that Uwe Boll quality to it at times.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But it's silly and it's fun, and they don't try to make it more than it is. But what's interesting, action wise, they do some neat things with it. And I'll tell you what, they've got they actually have a trebuchet, which is a type of catapult. And they're using it, and they're actually throwing things, which is amazing because usually they just do some sort of crappy special effect for it, but it looks great. And then they also have, war elephants in the movie. I know these are weird things to fixate on, but I'm like, man, if you're going to have war elephants in your direct-to-video sequel, I respect that.
It's fair, totally fair enough. Usually it's 15 guys in paper armor that are running at each other, and yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so, they're there. Yeah. But they also have elephants. and a trebuchet. Then the stinker for the week is Killer Elite, which I was kind of looking forward to because it has like three awesome tough guys in it. You know, Jason Statham, Robert De Niro, and Clive Owen, and Clive Owen's mustache. And it's just, it's convoluted. It's a mess. It has some okay scenes, but it really isn't that good. I mean, Scorpion King's way better.
Interesting.
So we only got a couple seconds left. Beauty and the Beast, Contraband, Joyful Noise. We didn't see any of them. Next week we're doing Haywire, Red Tails, Underworld. About 20 seconds. Tell us where we can find you, Tim.
Find me always at firstshowing.net, doing the Golden Briefcase every week. And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/TimBuell.
Tim Buell. That's right. Thank you again for doing the show. And,
my pleasure.
You know, very, very happy to be here. If you guys want to check us out, you can go to the web at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can also go to the Fat Guys Network and search that on iTunes. Other than that, we're out of here. We'll talk to you next week.
Cheers.